Coming up on Tech News Weekly, Jason and I break down some of the news surrounding the coronavirus. Yes, there are updates. Facebook is canceling F8. Microsoft isn't attending GDC. Plus, we dig in a little bit more to talk about what you should know. Then, Sam Moscovich joins us to talk about how he is an avocado and banana caper, sorta, kinda. He was checking out Amazon's latest cashierless grocery store. Before we round things out with Joan Solzman joining us to talk about Bob Iger resigning from Disney. Stay tuned because there's a lot to learn in this episode of Tech News Weekly. Tech News Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 122, recorded Thursday, February 27th, 2020. This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. Hello and welcome to Tech News Weekly, the show where every week we talk to and about the people making and breaking that tech news.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah. I'm Micah Sargent.
I'm Jason Howell, ready to make it and break it.
And shake it. But don't bake it.
No, but that's the next logical progression.
After you shake,
consider
you do bake.
Baking it.
Yes.
But don't actually do it.
But don't stir it.
Okay. We're going to start with the stories of the week. However, right before showtime, I made the realization, thanks to Scooter X in the chat room, that Facebook's F8 developer conference is being canceled because of coronavirus concerns.
Yeah.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah. Facebook is canceling its own conference. And mind you, the F8 conference is May 5th and 6th. It's only February. They're already canceling their May event. Microsoft also says it is not going to be attending the Game Developers Conference, commonly known as GDC. And I'm curious if that ends up being canceled in the end as well.
I mean, it's kind of looking like this is the ongoing trend, right? What was it? AT&T, Verizon, and IBM all pulled out of RSA Security Conference, which is happening this week. If Facebook's canceling its major conference, I mean, F8 is its
The announcement show.
That's the huge show for Facebook. I would not be surprised if Google ends up canceling Google I.O.
Right.
In light of this.
Like, WWDC for Apple.
My goodness, this could be a really interesting direction for the year.
This year is going to be, I think, very interesting. And you know, it's canceling for the sake of, it's not, you know, you're going to touch down and become a zombie kind of thing. Nobody's worried about that. The cancellations are taking place because this novel coronavirus, the unique aspect of it is that it doesn't make most people very ill. And so it is hard in some cases to know when people are sick with it. And so it spreads quite easily. And so
Under the radar.
So the CDC is kind of suggesting that folks start to think about social distancing. And you can't socially distance if you're at a conference with a lot of other people.
With a lot of people coming in from all over the world, shaking hands. These are very social events. Yeah, this is. I mean, not that it wasn't concerning before, but when you take a look through the lens of technology, it's affecting dramatically. It's affecting the supply chain. It's now affecting kind of the conferences, which is where a lot of these relationships are made. Arguably, you know, Mobile World Congress is happening or would be happening this week, but it was canceled for the same reason. And you know, those relationships are still made. It's not like this stuff can't happen outside of a convention or a conference. It just forces a rethink on how this business is done. And it's going to this could have long term effects on these types of events, potentially, if we go a whole year where they're all canceled and maybe companies realize, like, well, wait a minute, why are we pumping and channeling, you know, at least the bigger companies, the smaller companies, they really suffer because they rely on that, mm-hmm. those connections it's and kind of, being exposed in that way.
It's kind of a bummer there. And another place where it popped up for me, I don't know if you saw, excuse me. I don't know if you saw, but there was a there is a company that makes cases for iPads, and they came out with a case that has a trackpad on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a keyboard in the back with a little trackpad in the front. And for some reason, I'm blanking on the name of that company. I pre-ordered this trackpad keyboard fun thing so I could talk about it on iOS Today, Hands on iOS, and those different shows. And I got an email a couple days ago that said, you know how we were supposed to be delivering that to you this month? We're now looking at probably late April for delivery. Because of the shutdown of plants and manufacturing facilities because of the coronavirus. So that was an interesting sort of more direct impact, because we've been hearing the whispers of how phones may not come out when we expect them to, or there might be fewer. And so this direct correlation was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And then last night, and I think we're kind of making this the story
this
of the week
is the
now.
Story
is that
of the
okay?
Week,
last night I went to the to Amazon, and I had saved some stuff that I wanted to get later. I always have hand sanitizer. I always have those things in my home regardless. Yeah. And this was before that. I sort of have a subscription. But I went online, and it's all sold out online.
Yeah.
I couldn't find hand sanitizer.
Masks.
We were talking about the N95 masks being sold out everywhere. I went to the store last night, and I was like, okay, I'll just get some travel-sized hand sanitizers, because that is the thing that they recommend, is at least you need to be keeping your hands clean, keeping other surfaces clean, especially shared surfaces.
Lot, yeah. mm-hmm.
No hand sanitizer in the Target at all.
People are stockpiling. People are stocking up.
Luckily, they didn't. I think people didn't realize that there were some I think it's called benzalkonium chloride wipes, and those are good for sanitizing your hands and sanitizing surfaces.
So you hacked it.
They missed those, and so I said, "Okay, I'm just going to get a bunch of these," and here we go.
You were a hand sanitizer hacker.
I was. Tapped into the system.
Yeah. I mean, this is incredibly concerning. Definitely don't mean to make light of it, because it's a very serious and potentially very serious. Like mm-hmm. that's kind of the fear that I think a lot of people have right now, and I would consider myself in that category, which is I don't know enough to know whether fear is justified or not, how preparation is justified. The stock market is certainly reacting.
Yes.
The stock market's been completely out of sorts entirely, because you just don't know. And these companies, Samsung had to close down their the plant that they were creating the Z Flip out of, because there was a reported coronavirus incident there. They reopened the plant, but that has the potential to happen again over any number of different plants, affecting any number of different devices. And so that email that you got on that product, I fear that is the beginning of something. You will see more of this, and we're going to hear more about product delays. And at the end of the day, that affects dramatically the bottom line of these companies. And that's, I think, where a lot of the business end of the fear lies.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, really quickly, there's a lot of information out there. There is a lot of misinformation out there. And one of the things that sort of helped me get a base understanding, it's very easy, that the CDC has documentation available that you can read and sort of understand what you should be doing. Because one of the things that I didn't realize as it stands is you are not protecting yourself by wearing, if you are not sick, you are not protecting yourself by wearing most masks. Mm. Most masks, you're not protected by wearing them.
But you feel better
wearing them. They are meant for folks who have an illness to keep themselves from getting other people sick.
That's important.
And so going out and buying, stockpiling these masks, it's not really helping you.
It's not preventing
you
from receiving
because
something.
Most of us don't
know what you need to do to properly fit the mask, and most folks aren't getting the proper mask in general. So all you're doing is giving yourself a false sense of security because you're still just as likely to get those particulates that would make you sick wearing the mask than not. It is meant to block the particulates from escaping the mouths of those who have the illness. But then we also have learned that it's touch transmitted, maybe more so even than via air. So keep your hands washed and cleaned, and you know, the CDC has some great documentation right now on what you can do to just be aware and be safe in that sense.
Yes, indeed. All right. Not bad for a spur of the moment last minute decision to change our stories of the week. Very appropriate. All right, up next, Amazon's grocery store, and Sam Moscovich. We had him on months ago when Amazon, probably at this point more than a year ago, when Amazon opened its small first Go grocery store. Well, he's back because Amazon opened a larger store, and we're going to talk to him about his experience there. He's got a lot to share. It's pretty funny. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. You know, multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, all those things, a confusing review process. Today, hiring can be easy, and you only really have one place to go to get it done, and that's ZipRecruiter. As long as you remember ZipRecruiter, that's all you need to know. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but that's not it. They don't stop there. They have a powerful matching technology that runs underneath so that ZipRecruiter can scan thousands of the resumes that are coming into the service to find people with the right experience, and then it invites them to apply to your job. So it kind of does it in reverse. You can even add screening questions to your job listing, so that way you can effectively filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective, in fact, that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. We certainly practice what we preach here at TWIT. We've made a number of hires through ZipRecruiter. A number of people who are here today, they came to us through ZipRecruiter. It works. My wife's used ZipRecruiter. She loves it. Of course, you don't know my wife, but take my word for it. She really had a great experience with ZipRecruiter. Right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. You can find out what it's all about and really just supercharge your hiring capacity. It's ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Weekly.
Thank you so much. Now,
so very much.
I have to say, I had a delightful experience. I was reading this piece that might as well just be our time's Iliad. It was this epic piece about traversing and understanding Amazon's Amazon Go grocery store. And I'm excited to have our own version of
Boots
Homer
on the ground,
here today.
Boots on the ground.
Sam Moscovich of Ars Technica is here to walk us through his walkthrough of Amazon's Amazon Go grocery store. Hello, Sam.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I definitely feel like the Homer of our time as I strip half naked inside of an Amazon grocery store's bathroom. Yes.
It's amazing. So happy to have you here to talk about this. I mean, I want to, you know, people might, they might be suspicious. They might be a little bit unsure, but you have credentials, my friend, because you have gone to every Amazon thing, it seems, that's existed. So can you lay down your credentials? What other Amazon events and locales have you traversed?
Well, yeah. So I'm the only Ars Technica staffer based in Seattle, Washington, which is Amazon's headquarters city. And this is kind of where they grok out more of their real life projects. I've yet to see any drones flying around the city, but they started a gig economy program for delivery drivers. And so I drove and delivered dog food for people with the very pilot of that program. I went to the very first Amazon brick and mortar bookstore, which everyone thought was hilarious because we all thought the site kind of put brick and mortar stores out of business years ago. And then the very first Amazon Go grocery concept, which was more of a convenience store 7-Eleven style, I tested that out 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago to the day, where the concept was you walk in, you identify yourself using an app and a smartphone, and you just grab whatever you want and leave with no checkout, no confirming of purchase, while a huge array of cameras watch you shop and itemize everything you take, make sure that they don't count whatever you put back. And then there's a receipt that pops up maybe an hour later that says, this is what you took and this is how much it costs. And there's prices everywhere. They're not surprising you where you just grab things and go, oh, wow, how much did that cost? And sure enough, this has come back after putting out a bunch of other smaller Amazon Go stores throughout the nation. And I can't remember if there are any international ones, but I know New York has one, Chicago has one. And now in Seattle, they've come up with Amazon Go Grocery. Same idea, bigger concept, meaning it's not just sort of grab and go stuff. It's not obvious boxed things in very clear and repeatable labels. Now they have produce. They've got kale. They've got oranges. They've got bananas, which may not necessarily be the easy to track with the camera the way you might expect a box of Rice Krispies would mm-hmm. work. So I hear about this and immediately I tried to cause trouble.
Yes, and I do want to get to that trouble in a moment. But first, I think some folks might not be. You explained a little bit about the technology, but there are different systems out there. I remember when I was visiting a hotel and you could pull something out of this shelf and there was a sort of weighted plate. And upon doing so and closing the door, then it would know what item you took. How does Amazon's work? Because it's my understanding that there are no pressure plates on shelves and things here.
There might be some sort of pressure plate system. The thing is, we don't know 100% because Amazon doesn't want to tell us exactly its proprietary system. But it's not quite like a mini bar. The idea is you look up and if you're watching the web feed of this, you're seeing some of the photos I took of this insane array of what appear to be RGB and infrared sensors. There's all these little boxes and they each have two visible little slivers. And when I'm using a smartphone camera, I can see the little infrared dinging of a light on those, watching your every move. The idea is when you go into the store and you tap your identification with a smartphone on a kiosk, it sort of scans you. I don't know if it's a face check or a clothing check or what it's looking for, but it's sort of creating a profile of who you are compared to all the other dozens of people in the store at the same time. And it watches you and it watches you and it watches you while you are grabbing things. So it's also paying attention to all the items. So it's not the cameras are watching you, but it's also watching all of the different boxes and produce and whatever else. So you can grab stuff, go back, put it back, grab another one, put it back, juggle and go crazy. And the pitch is it'll just work. It will know what you did and did not take.
The only place in theory it seems to not be watching you is the bathroom. And
that's
where all the action happens. That's part of the way you nabbed that nanner. So can you talk a little bit about your super sleuth experience to sort of kind of walk away with a banana?
Sure. I mean, the idea being, as a tech site, we would love for Amazon to call us and say, this is the breakdown. This is what we did in our first wave of stores. Here's what we changed in our second wave. We don't get that luxury. So instead, I have to go in like a jackass and just act like a fool and figure out what I can do to trick the system. My first idea was, with produce having a bunch of different shapes or things are bundled together, what can I grab multiple handfuls of, juggle around, put stuff behind my back, and so on in order to trick it. Maybe it'll think I grabbed too many bananas, or maybe I could steal a banana or something like that. And at one point, I managed in all of my juggling to just wedge a banana between my back and my backpack and then put things back. And I'm like, maybe I got the one banana. And as I look around, I go, wait a second, this place, unlike the other stores, has a bathroom. I hadn't seen a bathroom at any other location. And even though there's a bunch of cameras near the bathroom to see who's going in and going out, there's nothing inside the bathroom that I know of. I didn't take photos inside the bathroom because I'm not Dr. Disrespect. That's a Twitch joke. But once I was in there and I put the banana in my backpack, I thought, wait, I've got other clothes. I switched out my top, put on a jacket, took the backpack and held it onto my stomach and took the sunglasses that were on top of my head and put them in my bag. So that's four different kind of data points that I thought maybe that'll do it. And what happened was everything I'd picked up and juggled and done like crazy up till that point, it had tracked. I did not steal that one banana. However, from that point on, I just started openly just taking stuff like a normal person. I even spoke to an Amazon representative on my way out who I'd noticed I was a member of the press with a camera. And she's like, "What'd you get?" I said, "I got some fancy cookies." She's like, "Oh." And when I left, it took 4 hours for them to process my visit.
Wow.
It said that I was there for 2 hours and 30 minutes, even though I was only there 20 minutes. And then it gave me a bill. It was only the two items from before the bathroom. Meaning, as far as Amazon's cameras were concerned, I shopped, went to the bathroom, and died. And instead of calling the police, they billed me for about 67 cents of produce.
Well, you know, 67 cents seems like not very much, but even the rich will tell you, like, being stingy with your money, like, accounting for everything, that's the secret.
Look, so he walked away with some fancy cookies.
The 67 cents is funny because that includes an avocado that I didn't actually take.
Oh.
There's a little shelf when you go to the bathroom that says, "Leave merchandise here." So, because you're hygienic, you don't want to bring in your food into the bathroom, which is fair. Left an avocado on that shelf. And as Amazon's app warns you, there's a lot of rules, and I put them in the article. That you, once you take something, if you don't put it back, you get charged for it. And I didn't want to be that jerk who just like started putting things in the wrong place to see how the cameras would go with that. I'm sure that's its own headache for them to deal with. But I don't like torturing actual retail employees.
Right.
Even though there's no checkout aisle, there are a lot of people around the store asking how you're doing and having a real smiling face about, you know, the end of the retail workforce. So the avocado, it got charged for. And I have an option. I can go on the app and ask for a refund on that 49-cent avocado, which is a ridiculous price, and that's its own conversation. I ate that cost. That's fine.
Yeah, so that was actually my next question. You mentioned there are people in the store. What are the – I imagine there were at one point job listings. I don't know if you had a chance to learn about that. What are the positions that are available in the store? What are folks doing? Because I'm going, how does that raw meat make it onto the shelves? How do those veggies get there? What's going on? Is there a bot doing this?
The previous Amazon Go stores I've been to have included open windows that show – kitchen staff, because they have sort of ready-made meals at those. And I think Amazon wants you to know that there's a perfectly kind, happy person working on that stuff. This store has all kinds of blacked out windows all around. And I did a lap around the building and saw essentially just a giant warehouse of brought in food. It just looks like a grocery store in terms of stock constantly being brought in, because like any other grocery store, you don't like as a customer going up and seeing a depleted section. My guess is there's just people constantly filling in those bins. I mean, they've got a whole pastry shelf with donuts on it that was filled to the brim and constantly looking attractive. So I just assume it's normal grocery stocking, as opposed to there's greeters, people asking how you're doing. There's people bringing out produce. There's one person who mans the liquor, beer, and wine section, because you have to have an ID checked at that point. Oh. The robots haven't figured that out. They don't scan your face to check your age. So you go up to that person, they check your ID, and then cameras watch you buy beer, wine, and liquor.
Gotcha. Now, does anything have any special labeling on it? Are we looking at any sort of tracking points or QR codes, or are the systems just being smart on their own and going, I know that's a lemon and I can follow that lemon from point A to point Z? How do the cameras, you know, lock onto things?
That was my question in 2018, because I grabbed Coke cans and I thought maybe it's got a special code or some sort of thing. And then I took the Coke can I had bought at that point, went down the block, got another one. They're the exact same labeling. The idea is that the camera is figuring out just enough information about that object to know what it is, where it is in the store, that whatever triangulation it's doing is not because of RFID codes. You're not using your phone to scan anything. You keep your phone in your pocket. Once you check in on the little kiosk at the beginning, that's it for your work. The cameras are apparently doing everything else. And if there's a bunch of pressure plates around, I feel like that's more complicated, honestly, having the camera system watch stuff, because when you're picking up and putting down, especially with bananas, like, how do you get the exact weight of every single – they even have watermelons. Like, how do you get that weight kind of perfectly balanced out? I think, honestly, they want it to be the kind of system that you can put into any store. Mm. And then Amazon can watch all of that retail data come in and out. I think that's what's lucrative for them, is controlling the data pipeline of any retail experience for their own study and to give to other shops.
I mean, when you think about the systems that we have in place that are developing so rapidly around things like facial recognition, mm-hmm. you know, that systems are so capable of looking at a view of someone, you know, that might not be right up on the screen, might be a little bit further away, but to use very certain data points to triangulate and figure out exactly who that person is. And then you think about the items in a grocery store. I have to imagine, like, you know, a box of Golden Grahams is pretty darn easy to identify to a camera that is just wildly, you know, pointed around the entire depths of the store, identifying all these objects. So object identification in this age of artificial intelligence and feeding it hundreds of thousands of samples, you know, as the test case in order to make it smart, like, I'm sure that's part of the secret sauce that Amazon has going for it here.
Every retail chain in the world wants as much data about your shopping experience as possible. I mean, yeah. Amazon watches every single thing you do. You look at those URLs when you click around the internet about to buy something. I used to work at Amazon a bazillion years ago. That's another story. Those URLs are just chock full of information, let alone the tracking cookies. That's just the digital side. Yeah. Now imagine you're a retailer and you can see what people look at, how long they pause, whether they pick the thing up, look at it, and then put it back. Yeah. What if you change the price in an hour? And then how does that change the use? What if you've got that data about how people go into the healthcare, medicine, birth control aisles and mm-hmm. go from that point? Like, the amount of crazy data and how that can be traded around makes me a little insane. But I do think it's worth pointing out, because there's no regulation. Nobody is looking at this and saying this is important for us to look at year by year by year, see how that data is being used, bought, sold, traded. And a store like this brings that to the forefront, because it's not necessarily new. Other chains are doing this, and Amazon's just kind of ramping up. The loyalty card is turning into the crazy camera system.
Yeah, right. Well, I feel like we talked about this not too long ago. Your face is becoming your loyalty card, right? Yeah, yeah. In many ways.
Well, so there was a question in the chat room, and I do want to ask this. I know you explain it in the article, but I think it's important for people to note. This is a very sort of high-tech experience, and they were asking, do you have to have your phone in order to get into the store?
In New York City, there is a way to go in with a cash-only customer because of New York law. Nothing like that is apparent in the Seattle store. They may have that sort of system available for customers to access. I don't know, but the default is that you are told, get your phone out, install the app, add your Amazon credentials, make sure there's a valid payment option, and then tap that and go in. Hmm. And that is a very, I would say, an anti-consumer sort of thing to make a default. I assume that New York process is available at other stores, and there's people waiting at the door that you can ask and talk to about all of this stuff. I didn't go with any of that because I was trying to just show off the walk right through experience. But there have been there's people talking about the different ways that you could or couldn't access this store. And yeah, that's a really big question. And I'm glad that New York regulators are at least talking about it and making sure that already there's some sort of check and balance to make sure this is not completely the only way that you shop from the future for in the future going forward.
All right. So I have to ask you a question as we kind of round this out. If you had left and you hadn't been charged for that banana, what would you have done, Sam?
Oh, if you want to know, I am making a donation to the University District Food Bank in Seattle, Washington, to 5 times the amount of money that I pilfered from this Amazon nice. Go store, because I'm good. I have a job. I don't need my choice.
You don't need an
of
extra
going
banana.
Into the store and doing this was not because I'm desperate for groceries, but because we like to explore Volmes.
Absolutely.
At Ars Technica.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. I love it. I love it. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. If people are looking for your work online, want to follow you and see what you do next, how can they do so?
ArsTechnica.com has many of my articles. @SamRed has many of my thoughts and feelings. And just come on over in Seattle. We can play all of these games.
Beautiful.
Looks fun to me.
Thank you
so
much.
Good to see you, Sam. We'll talk to you soon. Take care, man. All right, a big, rather unexpected announcement came earlier this week when Disney CEO Bob Iger announced his resignation from Disney, leaving Bob, is it Chapek, head of the Parks Division in control of the company. The timing is curious, to say the least. Joining us to talk about this transition in light of the impressively successful launch of Disney Plus is Joan Salzman, senior reporter for CNET. Welcome to the show, Joan.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Good to hear you.
Yeah, good to hear you too. Loud and clear. So first, we knew that he would step down sometime. He's been kind of alluding to this for the last few years. So we knew it was going to happen sometime in the nearest future. But the announcement seemed to take everyone by surprise even still. Why is that?
Well, you're exactly right. We knew that Iger, he'd already delayed his retirement a couple times. And we knew that his complete retirement, his like extrication from Disney, would be at the end of next year. That was already set. But no one really expected to get the details of the succession plan on a random Tuesday in February, seemingly coming together and being announced on a very like spur of the moment basis. At least that's how it appeared. You know, they made the announcement right after the close of trading on Tuesday, and there was a conference call like 45 minutes later. That was one surprise, that the succession plan came out when no one was really expecting anything to come out at this point in time at all. And the other surprise was that in the naming of Bob Chapek, a lot of people after the really successful launch of Disney Plus kind of saw that as setting the stage for the executive in charge of that part of the business, Kevin Mayer. That seemed to be putting him in line as the heir apparent to Iger. And so it kind of came as a bit of a double surprise. Not only did we get the succession plan announced out of the blue, but also it was somebody that was certainly among the top candidates and was in the running and people knew was a possible contender, but wasn't maybe the one that people had first in line at this point in time.
Yeah, especially just considering how much of a success Disney Plus seems to have been right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Is Iger, he's still involved though, right? Like even though he's not CEO, is his involvement directly tied to Disney Plus? How long does that last and what happens when he's done there?
Right. So Bob Iger is continuing to stay on as chairman. And the way that he's described it is that with Bob Chapek taking over day-to-day operations, Iger's going to be focusing on the creative side. He hasn't really specified what that means, if that's going to be focused on the creative side of Disney Plus, if it's going to be focused on the creative side of Avengers, or what they're going to do with Lucasfilm now that they've had some tribulations with the Star Wars franchise in terms of fan reaction to the way that latest trilogy wrapped up. It's unclear. I'm sure it'll be a lot of all those things. It's unclear exactly which one's going to be his number one priority, if there will be one. But the understanding is that he is going to stay on as chairman through the end of next year. So he's keeping that same date for his final retirement leaving Disney the same. It's just now in this last 18 months, year and a half plus, he's going to be focusing on less of the moving parts. He's letting Bob Chapek take over, you know, the gigantic operation that is the full body of Disney now, including all the Fox stuff that they've acquired. Bob Chapek is going to be taking over day-to-day operations for that, and that allows Iger to focus on the creative side of the business and have this sort of elongated transition period before he's finally gone.
I don't know if it's on purpose, but Disney really loves their Bobs.
They do. So,
yeah. It's really confusing.
It can be a little confusing.
With Bob, right?
What are some of the other things that Iger has done in his 15 years with the company? I had thought that he was with the company even longer than that because he's made such a transformation with the company. But what are kind of some of those notable moments through his career?
Yeah, well, he's been at basically the company his entire career. He's been CEO for 15 years. But he started out at ABC before Disney bought ABC. So he's basically been with what is the company since he was like a teenager. But to your question, you know, I mentioned a few of them already. He bought Lucasfilm. He bought Marvel. He bought Pixar. I think those are three of those standout acquisitions that are now crown jewels in what has become a pretty diversified lineup of franchises that definitely are, those are obviously feature film franchises, not entirely, but they're kind of best known as feature film enterprises. And Disney, by virtue of those three, by virtue of Pixar, also by virtue of Walt Disney Animation Studios, which obviously it extends past just Iger's tenure, but combining Marvel with Star Wars, with Pixar, and with the like inbuilt, ingrained Disney itself, Disney Animation Studios and Disney proper productions, those have dominated the box office for the last 5 years. Like, at least half of the top 10 movies of the last 5 years have been Disney properties, and probably, you know, and for longer than that. No other studio has really matched that. And then in terms of like stuff outside of Disney, outside of Disney feature length theatrical films, he was there for the expansion to Shanghai Disney in the Parks Department. That was their biggest expansion ever. That was a real high point in that area too. And of course, Disney Plus is going to be the capstone to his tenure. It being really a reorganization of the entire company, betting on streaming to be the future of how entertainment is consumed by people going forward.
I mean, as Iger steps away, is there any reason to think that any like that kind of that progress that they're making with Disney Plus would change? I mean, it seems like he's set the groundwork for this, and it is the future of Disney. It seems like it's on a good path, but he's very intimately involved with the success of it. So, is there any fear there?
I don't know. You know, it's Disney Plus had such an impressive, like unprecedented, successful launch for this streaming service that there's not really any comparison to having so many people signing up in such a short period of time. Now, granted, that's not only a virtue of the service launching from Disney or the service launching under Iger. It's also indicative of the fact that we're just at a different point in time when a streaming service of this scale and this ambition is launching. It's just very different than like the dynamics were when Netflix launched. You can't really compare those two. It's very different than the dynamics when Hulu launched. You can't really compare those two. But I think that a lot of the trajectory for Disney Plus is very well set in terms of their strategy, in terms of the way that they have moved all the internal chess pieces around to advance that strategy and work towards those goals. And so it'd be surprising, especially since Iger is going to be remain. I mean, Bob Chapek still reports to him technically. I think it would be surprising to see there being a lot of uncertainty about that vision. The thing that I think where there is some uncertainty is if there are. This strategy works really well and has worked really well for right now, but it's a dynamic market. And so the question will be, especially after Iger is officially gone, you know, it's a ways away, but what happens when there's an all of a sudden there's a wrinkle in the market, something changes, something upends, what do you do then? And then it's a question of, will people trust Bob Chapek to be the kind of person to make those decisions?
Yeah, right, right. Does he have the technological vision, let's say? Is there any indication that he has that in his kind of portfolio of skills and talents for this job? I mean, he was managing the parks divisions, and that's no small feat. But I mean, from a technological perspective, like, are people pretty happy with him as a choice in that regard?
Short answer is no. but the longer answer is a no. But there are all these boxes. With a company as gigantic as Disney and as multifaceted as Disney is, there's a lot of boxes you need to check in order to become a really viable candidate to run that entire operation. And you know, talking to analysts and other people, I think most people agree that Bob Chapek doesn't tick off that streaming technological box perfectly by any means, but he checks off almost every other box. Okay. And so the working theory is that you have somebody that's going to be able to be he's been there 27 years. So he knows the company inside and out and has seen it through other parts of its evolution. And as far as we know, the person who is running Disney Plus, Kevin Mayer, he's not leaving unless he's really, really rubs them the wrong way that he wasn't the person to get this job. They'll still have the person that was the on-hands executive at the very top of Disney Plus there. And so I think that combined with the fact that the combination that Iger is going to remain there for a period of time, that there's no sense yet that Kevin Mayer is going anywhere and that Bob Chapek is very skilled in all these other aspects of the business, I think is giving some people, you know, at least if nothing else, like, well, let's wait and see. This isn't a disaster in the making, like obviously on the surface looking at it. But certainly he does not really have a lot of expertise in streaming. His distribution expertise dates back before Netflix was even streaming, I think. So he doesn't have a lot of background in that at all.
Yeah, interesting to see how that plays out considering the success of Disney Plus right now. And, you know, like you said, who knows what the technology is that emerges 5, 10, 15 years down the line that suddenly that's the new focus for Disney. And by that time, you know, he could offer something completely new that somebody else would have a hard time filling. So good stuff. Joan Salzman is a senior reporter for CNET. Joan, thank you so much for hopping on. Where can people follow you online if they want to follow your work?
Yeah, if you want to follow me, all of my reporting is always on CNET.com. And you can follow my Twitter at Joan_E.
Right on. Excellent. Thank you, Joan. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Great.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. And that is it. We have reached the end. Dun, dun, dun. Of Tech News Weekly, which, as you know, because you're already subscribed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Publishes every Thursday at twit.tv/TNW. This is the part of the show where we guilt people.
Yeah. Shame.
You're subscribed, aren't you? Well, if you aren't, twit.tv/TNW. There's no shame in admitting that you aren't subscribed because you can.
Yeah.
Just go
that
there.
Just gives you the opportunity to subscribe.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great.
Just do yourself a favor.
Everybody loves new experiences.
That's right. Check it out, twit.tv/TNW.
Of course, you can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnw@twit.tv. And here come the teas. You can follow us on social media. That's at twit on Twitter, at twit.tv on Instagram, at twittalk on TikTok. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Micah Sargent on Twitter and at Micah Sargent and pretty much all of the other social things as well. What about you, Jason?
At Jason Howell on Twitter. I'll just go ahead and plug real quick. Hands on Android episode 2. It launches is publishing today.
Ooh.
It's a deep dive into the new Android 11 developer preview 1 that Google released last week, I believe it was. So if you want to know what's coming in Android 11, check that out. twit.tv/HOA.
Wait, coincidentally.
What?
There's an episode of Hands on iOS publishing today as well. What?
How does it work like that? I don't even get how it works like that. But
I'm doing a deep dive into the clock app because everybody knows the clock app for alarms.
Yeah.
But it does so much more.
Nice.
I actually, in doing research for it, learned quite a bit more that the clock app could do that
I didn't realize.
So that was kind of fun for me. You can join that experience by heading to twit.tv/HO. because it's iOS instead of Android.
That's right.
Yeah.
We have a lot of shows, so just go to twit.tv and check it out. All sorts of shows for you to subscribe to. Thanks to everyone who helps us do the show each and every week. We've got John, Jeff, John, Burke, Colleen, literally everyone that works here helps us do this show, and we appreciate their help for that. And thanks to you for watching and listening. We'll see you next week on Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody. Let's elbow.
Yeah, just... Even that still.